From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Congrats to Florida State. NCAA football champs defeating a tough Auburn team tonight, 34-31. It was a great game. Next hour, the dangers of Fukushima. It is not pleasant. Here's what's happening. Well, if you were feeling down on Monday, know this, you were not alone. Monday, January 6, 2014, is what some psychological researchers call Blue Monday. Millions are returning to work after time off for the holidays, and they're facing the facts, the big price tag that came along with all the gifts. Others are worried about the weather, relationship problems, New Year's resolutions. Blue Monday, they say, is the most miserable day of the year. Well, it is what you make it. But you talk about miserable day. The U.S. has basically gone into hibernation thanks to the coldest Arctic outbreak in at least 20 years. It promises to keep wind chills Tuesday as low as 40 below in parts of the country. As many as 187 million Americans, now that's more than half of the nation's population, live in regions submerged under the very rare polar vortex, so broad that every state except Hawaii can expect some freezing temperatures. The phenomenon called the polar vortex is essentially an Arctic cyclone. It usually sits near the North Pole, but this week it's decided to travel south. Let's check in with Earth Changes media expert Mitch Batras. Mitch, this situation is unbelievable. You've been watching it, I'm sure.
Oh, sure, George. Good to be with you again. There's like three particular areas that are of most importance, especially around the records. A lot of the records that are being quoted are wind chill factors. That's a huge difference. I mean, it's true. You do have that the feeling of say 20 degrees lower than maybe what it is. However, that's not the real temperature. And so it's making some people a little nervous about that. Here's another thing. As you know, I'm always looking backwards as well as forward when it comes to records. Now, although these temperatures are critical and everybody does need to take care, it is not the highest by far. The most recent temperatures that are the lowest were in Massachusetts and Maine, -18.9 in both those states.
That's cold, Mitch.
Oh, extremely cold. You think that's cold? How about this, George? In Michigan, -51, and I'm not that's not wind chill. That's actual temperature.
Jeez.
-51 degrees in 1934. In Vermont, -50 actual temperature in 1933. Iowa, -47 in 1996. So to keep things in perspective, that although these are very dangerous temperatures, I understand that, but by no means that the Earth has not seen this before, and in recent history. Another point of interest: this Arctic vortex or polar vortex also has some people confused. Basically, what that is, actually, we spoke about it previously, George. It's related to wave number 5. Is one term. Another term is the Rossby waves. In my terms, it's simply shifting ocean and jet stream currents related to charged particles.
Mm-hmm.
When solar activity is low, it actually lets in more charged particles called cosmic rays. And that, of course, you know, has that cycle with the Earth's core. But it's what's happening is that the jet stream is shifting. And that's bringing of the Arctic and polar air from, in this case, from the north-south. It's also from the south-north. They call that the Arctic vortex. This one, the polar vortex.
Well, I got to tell
you. There it is in a nutshell.
Well, I got to tell you, though, Mitch, in my lifetime, I've never seen it this cold. And though they say it's the coldest in 20 years, I'm a little older than that. I don't remember it being this cold. Mitch Batras, of course, his website, earthchangesmedia.com. In the United Kingdom, a 15-year-old girl is reportedly falling asleep up to 30 times a day after getting a flu shot. In a moment, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny joins us We're going to talk about this story, strange story. Fruits, vegetables, whole grains might be an unlikely treatment for asthma, according to animal studies. Tests on mice published in the journal Nature Medicine show that a high-fiber diet could reduce inflammation in the lungs. The extra fiber changed the nutrients being absorbed from the gut, which in turn altered the immune system. So if you are prone to asthmatic attacks, think about that. The Senate has confirmed Janet Yellen as the first woman to lead the Federal Reserve, elevating an advocate of fighting unemployment and a backer of the central bank's efforts to spur the economy with low interest rates and massive bond purchases. She's 67 years old, will replace Ben Bernanke, who is stepping down after serving as chairman for 8 years, dominated by the Great Recession and the Fed's efforts to combat it. Aviation authorities have been left baffled after a UFO, the shape of a rugby ball, reportedly passed within a few feet of a passenger jet near Heathrow Airport in the United Kingdom. We've got that story for you in our highlight reel at coasttocoastam.com. Listen to this story. A pilot on an A320 Airbus reported the near miss to air traffic controllers, prompting an investigation. No one has been able to identify the object. The aircraft was cruising at 34,000 feet, about 20 miles west of Heathrow Airport, when the captain spotted the object out of a left-hand side cockpit window. He said it was a cigar rugby ball-like in shape, bright silver, metallic, traveling towards the jet. The pilot said he felt certain it was going to crash into his aircraft, and he even ducked as it headed toward him. It did not appear to make impact. He told investigators he believed the object passed within just a few feet above the jet. Let's check in with the father of modern-day ufology, Stanton Friedman. Stan, I don't know if you've had too much time to investigate this thing, but what a story.
Well, remember, this happened in July. Mm-hmm. It's taken them that long
to get it out,
to release the information. And there are a couple of surprises. One was that, oh, they still check on UFO sightings, huh? We had been under the impression that the English guys didn't. They closed the effort, you know. Secondly, if you go to the web, And just put in aircraft UFO collisions, you get pages of examples.
Yeah.
So it's nothing new, but it's good to hear about it straight, you know, without adulteration, so to speak.
That's right.
And things are still going on. And, you know, New Year's had, 200 sightings.
Huge.
On the West Coast.
Huge. Could these be drones, Stan?
Well, I don't think so, and I should mention rugby ball, very similar to a football. It's not round, in other words.
Not like a soccer ball.
Not like a soccer ball. Rugby ball. And they play rugby over there. Not many people here play it, but that's a rough and tumble game, boy.
Yeah, it is.
What this means, I don't know, other than people are paying attention. You know, Mexico paid a lot of attention to near collisions. And NARCAP, the aviation group, pilots who are willing to listen to other pilots without revealing names and all that sort of stuff who see UFOs, one of their major concerns was aircraft safety.
Yeah.
You know, it could happen. And you know, what if that had hit that plane at 34,000 feet? You'd have had, you know, the air blow out or in, as the case may be. And it would have been a terrible disaster. And so it is something not to be ignored. I'm glad to hear people taking that stance anyway. It'd be nice if governments released their data. And let me correct an impression. Somebody asked me this the other day. Well, hasn't everybody released all their data? No.
Of course not.
They haven't. And, you know, everything but the highly classified data. And let's not forget General Bolander, who said reports which could affect national security are not part of the Blue Book system, the American system. And he said that back in 1969. And there will continue to be investigated using the procedures designed for that purpose.
Well, I got to tell you, Stan, this story, as you said, though it happened in July, is starting to leak out now. And the pilots baffled and everybody else. Stanton's website, stantonfriedman.com, the father of modern-day ufology. Stan, thank you. You have a great new year, and I look forward to seeing you in a few months, and we'll talk more about that later on in a future show. In the news at coasttocoastam.com, scientists have found some of the earliest evidence for widespread tooth decay in humans. It comes from the skeletal remains of Stone Age hunter-gatherers who lived in what is now Morocco more than 13,700 years ago. The researchers say the individuals were eating a lot of high-carbohydrate nutty foods. The poor condition of their teeth suggests they were often in agony. Ouch. Okay, in a moment, we're going to check in with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. This is an incredible story. There's a report of a young girl falling asleep up to 30 times a day after she got a flu shot. Sherry's next with us on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, founder of the Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center. Now, that's a clinic that specializes in holistic and integrative medicine. We're talking about this story, and I'm going to tell you a little bit more about it. Now, this is a 15-year-old girl in the United Kingdom. She got a flu shot, and she's been falling asleep up to 30 times a day after that. But she's not alone, because apparently Australia's News Limited reports that she's not the first. There are at least 100 people who received, they were injected with this Pandemrix. It's a vaccine to combat against swine flu. They took it back in 2009. And apparently 100 people are suffering from this same sleeping disorder, narcolepsy, which we'll talk about, after being vaccinated with Pandemrix. Here's Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. This is appalling, Sherry.
Yes, it really is, George, but it's been going on for a while, and it really is related to this particular vaccine called Pandemrix. And when you read the package inserts and you look at what's actually in this vaccine, it is a very uniquely made vaccine that has an adjuvant in it called ASO3. And an adjuvant is added to a vaccine in order to stimulate an immune response so that you get a higher antibody stimulation. And even though that they've been using adjuvants and vaccines for 50 years or maybe more, they really aren't sure exactly how they work. And the one that the adjuvant that is used most commonly in most of the vaccines is aluminum. But this ASO3 is a particular type of highly inflammatory oil that GlaxoSmithKline has been making these inflammatory oils as adjuvants to be added into the vaccines. They have an ASO2, 3, and 4, and the one that some of your listeners may be familiar with is MF59, which is an oil-based adjuvant that was in the anthrax vaccines. And we really believe that the lion's share of what is happening is that this ASO3 is causing an autoimmune-type reaction to the brain. And what narcolepsy is, it's the brain's inability to get a deep sleep. It has a waking sleep-wake cycle that is not working very well because of the inflammation going on in the brain tissue. And that the conclusion that we are coming to from this is that the vaccine triggered an immune reaction against the brain centers that have to do with sleep. And this girl is unable to have a normal sleep-wake cycle.
This is so sad here. Now, is the shot still being given to people?
Fortunately, it is not. It was a specific type of vaccine that was made just for this, the H1N1 swine flu outbreak that we had back in 2009 and 2010. This vaccine was used. It was never licensed in the U.S. It was made, there are no vaccines in the U.S. that has yet been licensed with this ASO3, but it has been used in many countries around the world. It's been used in France, Australia, Finland, Sweden, and even though the EU has looked at it and said, yes, we believe that people have a very high incidence of perhaps having this inflammatory reaction in their brain from this adjuvant called ASO3, the license has continued to be valid. And the vaccine is still manufactured and sold in the EU, over in Europe, but it's not been used, fortunately, here in the U.S.
Now, let's look at some of the vaccines that are being given for the flu today, Sherry. You know, I'm the kind of guy to tell people, you make up your own mind, we'll just report on things. So I don't tell them not to take the vaccine. I don't tell them to take the vaccine. I do tell them what I do, and that is I haven't had a flu shot in God knows how long. Probably since I was a kid. What's going on in the world of vaccines today?
Well, in the flu shots, I think it's very important that if people feel somehow compelled that this is something that they need to have injected into their body, even though it works less than 16% of the time, meaning that there are more than 200 pathogens out there in circulation that can be causing things that look like the flu. And of those 200 different pathogens, there is one type of pathogen called metapneumovirus that causes more than 5% of flu-related type illnesses, but yet there's no vaccine for that. So if people really feel compelled that somehow they have to get a flu shot, even though the viruses in the shot are going to match the viruses in circulation less than 16% of the time, and that's CDC data that got pulled out of all of their information. One of the things I think is very important is for people to start asking, what is the brand name of the flu shot that I'm getting? Because a new flu shot that was just approved last year is called Flucelvax, and that is made from dog kidney cells.
Oh, geez.
It has polysorbate 80 in it, which I know we've talked about in the past,
yeah,
about how inflammatory that is in the Gardasil vaccine. And it has something called beta-propiolactone in it, which is a kind of a cousin-related chemical to formaldehyde. And so even though all of the flu shots are still mostly made with chicken eggs, and that we get chicken proteins from there, and we get chicken avian viruses from there, now we're going to be getting dog DNA, and that there are other flu shots that are being made from cells of aborted fetal tissue, from the retina of fetal tissues, and there's other ones that are going to be made from caterpillar eggs. And so people need to know, if they're going to get a flu shot, what's exactly coming through that needle that's going to go into your body and may not even keep you from getting the flu, but may have some very serious long-term consequences.
Absolutely. We're turning people into chimeras, aren't we?
Yes,
jeez.
Yes.
Now, what do we say to elderly people, Sherry? I don't want the world to panic here, but, you know, you've got some elderly people. We're in the flu season, and, you know, they probably say, I've got to take my flu shot. What do we say to them?
Well, we need to tell them that it, in their age of population, it works probably less than with anybody else. And when Dr. Thomas Jefferson, who's the coordinator of the vaccine field research in Rome of the Cochrane Collaboration, when they have done the silo reviews of all of the flu shots studies that have been published in all the different languages around the world, he is the lead researcher on analyzing these flu shot studies to see whether or not they have any validity, because the safety issue is really irrelevant if it doesn't work at all. And recently, he said that he had done a review of more than 217 published studies and found only 5% of them to be reliable. In other words, that means that 95% of flu vaccine studies are flawed, and their conclusions should be dismissed about whether or not they even work, and that where they seem to be the least effective is in the elderly. And so people are getting these flu shots, which have the multi-dose flu shots still have mercury in them, plus all of the other ingredients that we just talked about, and are getting those into your body, and they aren't even going to keep you from getting the flu.
We haven't heard much about the so-called pandemics that they talked about with the bird flu and the avian virus and everything else. Why are they holding back on us there?
Well, recently there have been some reports in the last couple of weeks about there's a sort of a resurgence of this H1N1 virus that seems to be causing a few more deaths than what they
oh,
are
really?
Expecting.
This was from years ago, too, wasn't it? This
yes, it's the same virus that was back when we were talking about the swine flu back in 2009 and 2010.
That's right. That's right.
And so now they're saying, well, it's coming back, and it's more deadly, and it's killing people, because they use this word deadly all the time just to, like, frighten people. And what I would like to know is if the people that are contracting the H1N1 virus and perhaps these people that have died from having this viral infection, what is their medical history? Did they have an H1N1 flu vaccine back in 2009 and 2010? Have they had a flu shot this year? Have they had a pneumonia shot? What other types of things have they been subjected to that may have weakened their immune system and made them more vulnerable to just another typical virus that's coming around this time of year?
Sherry, we're going to take phone calls with you in a moment, but very quickly, give us some of your websites.
Sure. My website for my office here in Cleveland, Ohio is Tenpenny IMC, which is the IMC is Integrated Medical Center, tenpennyimc.com. DrTenpenny.com, DrTenpenny.com is where you can get vaccine information and the Vaccine Research Library. You can go and research over 6,000 articles now.
You doubled.
It's more than doubled. So the Vaccine Research Library has more than 6,000 articles from conventional medical journals that we have all put together in one place to show problems associated with vaccines.
Super. We are coming back in a moment. We're going to take phone calls with Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. If you have had the flu vaccine and you had some kind of reaction, some adverse reaction, check in with us. And in all fairness, if you've had the vaccine and it helped you, you can check in too. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny with me. We're taking your calls. If you've had an adverse reaction to the flu shot, check in with us. And to be fair, if you've had a flu shot and things worked out for you, you can check in as well. Just check your weather out there, Sherry. In Cleveland, where you are, it's minus 11 degrees Fahrenheit right now.
Yes.
Ouch.
Yes, it very much is.
If you had a cell phone, I would probably have you walk outside right now and do a quick little weather report for us, and then you run back in.
No, thank you.
Is it? Here's a silly question. Uh-huh. Is it too cold for a virus to survive out there?
You know, that's a really good question, and I don't know exactly the answer to that, but I know the things that can't exist in this very cold weather are things like molds, and many times people get a lot of lung reactions and coughing and things like that in the winter when we have these marginally cold winters.
Yeah.
And the molds don't really die off and some of the bacteria don't die off. But one thing that we also know for sure is that it's very important to keep your vitamin D level up, because one of the things I've said all for many, many years is that, you know, in the summer we get a lot more D because we have a lot more sunshine and we're outside more and we have more exposure. And in the winter, our D level drops and we have less exposure to outdoors. Well, the viruses stay here pretty much all year round. They don't migrate south to go to South America in their winter and come back up here in our winter. And so what changes is our susceptibility. We have lower vitamin D level, and we also have huge increases in our sugar level that has happened from Halloween and Thanksgiving and Christmas. Then first thing you know, it's February. The stress level kind of goes down a little bit. Our vitamin D level is down. We're all stuck indoors because of this very cold weather, and we have an increased susceptibility to all these 150 to 200 different viruses, just not the influenza virus.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Joan in St. Louis, where it's a balmy minus 6 degrees. Right now. Hi, Joan. Go ahead.
Hi, George. This is your MSG lady.
There you are. Yeah, Joan used to be at my local show. That's right. And you're still fighting MSG, aren't you?
You better believe.
Good for you.
Do you know that there's MSG in the flu shot?
Well, there's MSG in the nasal flu shots, in the flu mist, and I've always found that to be quite interesting, because many people who are very sensitive to MSG, is obviously that you would know this, is that one of the major
side effects. I am very sensitive to it, and I've had it confirmed by pharmacists. They said they put the MSG in the vaccine because it excites these nerve cells and so forth.
Yeah.
It makes it more receptive to receive the virus.
It's in the nasal flu shot called flu mist, because it does exactly that. And one of the major side effects that people have from MSG is headaches, and yet we're squirting a flu shot up the nose with MSG in it and increasing people's susceptibility to MSG sensitivity and bringing those viruses across the nerves in your nose that could potentially go directly into your brain.
Thanks, Joan. What are these vaccines, Sherry? Dumping grounds for chemicals?
Well, you would certainly think so, wouldn't you, George? When you look at the very long laundry list of all the different chemicals that are in all of the different vaccines, that after a while, it just becomes exactly what you said. Why are they putting all of these things into these shots and thinking that it's just going to go into our system with impunity? Like, I just want to go back for one second to talking about this gal with this narcolepsy, this falling to sleep, you know, so many times, because we never blame the vaccines for the problem. In fact, while I was doing a little bit of investigating prior to the show this evening about it, I ran across a 147-page paper that countries all around the world were trying to determine whether or not this H1N1 flu vaccine, and particularly the Pandemrix one with its adjuvant, really did. Was that really what was causing these 100 or so people to have this narcolepsy? And the conclusion was that even though they thought there was an increase effect, they weren't really sure if whether or not this vaccine just simply hastened the disease onset of narcolepsy in people who were susceptible, and they were going to get it anyways. And if we would have just waited long enough, they would have developed narcolepsy, and it probably didn't have anything to do with the vaccine.
No, not at all.
And I hear this so many times, and George, the very first time that I saw that in writing was the first time I heard it when I saw it written about the pertussis vaccine back many, many years ago.
Remember that, yeah.
And it occurred to me that the vaccine industry never blames the vaccine for any problem. It's always the defective person. That if the person is defective or genetically susceptible or something is going wrong with that person, then when they get a shot, they'll have a reaction to it.
Let's go to Miles in Orange County, California. Hi, Miles.
Hi, Dr. Tenpenny and George.
How are you?
I had received the shot and just recently, New Year's Day, I had caught the flu and was hospitalized for 3 days and two nights, 102.7 temperature, and just got home Friday night.
Oh.
And that was after you got the
after
flu
the
shot?
Flu.
Yes, after the flu shot. And
will you ever get it again, Miles?
I don't know. I really don't. This was the worst flu I've ever had in my entire life, and it went around the house, and everybody in the house had the flu shot too.
Sherry, explain how Miles would get the flu after getting the flu shot. Obviously, it didn't work, but why?
Yeah.
Well, I think there's two parts to that, two main reasons. There's probably many others, but two that come immediately to mind. Number one is that there's anywhere from 6 million to 6 billion viruses that are being injected into your system through that are in that flu shot. And there is no way in my mind that a manufacturer can absolutely 100% guarantee that every single one of those viruses have been absolutely attenuated or weakened before they go into the flu shot. And so there's a high probability that there's a certain percentage of those viruses in that shot that are going to end up in your body that are still going to be very active. So now you have introduced a virus into your system through this injection that bypasses your skin, your mucous membranes, your gut, your lymphatics, and goes right into your system and starts the flu going. The other thing is that the flu shot, because of everything that's in it, the formaldehyde, the mercury, and all of those things, probably suppresses your immune system to a large degree, so that any of these other 100 or 200 types of viruses that are out there that can cause the exact same syndrome as what influenza can cause, they just hop right in there and make you sick.
Let's go to Denise in Gary, New Hampshire, first-time caller. Hey, Denise, good morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I picked right on the nasal. I got that done in 2011, I believe.
Was that the Tamiflu?
For the
flu
shot.
No, that would have been flu mist.
Flu mist.
The mist up in, that was the first time I ever got a flu shot, was back then. I got another one in 2012, and it was a shot, not the nasal. But I didn't feel right. I mean, I know I'm 50, but I mean, forgetfulness is it. I don't believe in that old age forgetfulness. I was just felt different. I would immediately forget things, and they diagnosed me with insomnia, and I just don't know. But ever since those, and I had gone into surgery on November 5th of this year, saying, I'm not getting the flu shot again. They actually came into my room with this shot ready to give to me, knowing I didn't get it.
It's become now in hospitals, it's a standing order not only for a flu shot, but for a pneumonia shot. So even if your doctor doesn't want you to get it,
right,
because even if your physician agrees with you and you should not get it, it's a standing order where pharmacists, techs, nurses can come into your room and give you the shot or push you so hard that you finally just, you don't feel good. And many people just say, okay, fine, just give it to me, just leave me alone.
What was the story of the pregnant nurse who was fired for refusing a flu vaccine? You remember that story?
I don't remember that story
just a few days ago.
But I know that there are hundreds and hundreds of nurses across the country who are being fired or being forced or being threatened with being fired if they don't get the flu shot.
And she was from Pennsylvania, and her employer said this is a mandatory flu vaccine. She said no. She lost her job over it.
There are hundreds of nurses, and not only nurses, but respiratory therapists and X-ray techs. And I got a call, George, from a gentleman who works in the IT department of a hospital. And he told me he works in a building down the street from the hospital. He has absolutely no patient care whatsoever. And he was threatened, saying, if you don't get a flu shot, you're going to lose your job. Which I want to put a little push out here for kind of a new organization that's just getting started. It's called Nurses Against Mandatory Vaccines. And this is a very young, very bright group. They have a Facebook page set up that they have 9,100 members already.
Wow.
That are signing a petition saying your right to get a vaccine should be your choice, and particularly when you're already sick and in the hospital. So this organization is Nurses Against Mandatory Vaccines, and I hope that your listeners will join them. You don't have to be a nurse to be part of the organization to maintain your right to refuse something that goes into your body that absolutely can harm you.
Steve, Houston, Texas, you're up with us. Hi, Stephen.
Thank you very much for taking the call.
Very well.
My primary care doctor had lobbied me very hard to get the pneumonia vaccine, and I relented. I did not allow him to do that with the flu vaccine, and now I'm wondering if I made the correct decision. How safe is that pneumonia vaccine?
Well, it's like getting 23 vaccines all at the same time because it has 23 strains of strep in it. So it's 23 different bacterial steps in it. It has a high amount of phenol in it, and phenol is highly inflammatory. When they first came out with the pneumonia shot many, many years ago, they used to say if you got one of those shots, it was good for a lifetime. And then they said, well, maybe every 10 years. And then they went to, well, maybe every 5 years. And now it's every 1 to 2 years because it doesn't work. And so it can cause a lot of problems. It can cause some problems with kidney inflammation, and it can just cause overall body inflammation because of how much is getting injected into your system at the same time.
Margo's in Grass Valley, California, west of the Rockies. Margo, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi,
you were saying that if one of your listeners was having an adverse reaction to a vaccine, to give you a call.
Yes.
I am having a very adverse reaction to the vaccine that I took recently. It was a Fluvia brand, and I had specifically asked for a vaccine that had no preservatives in it. It was very difficult to find in my area, but I finally tracked one down because I have an 84-year-old mother who has been very ill, and I was trying to avoid bringing home anything to her since I'm her caregiver. I do not normally get vaccines. And within 2 days of getting that vaccination, I started having the most insane bodily reactions. One of them was a feeling, it started in both of my lower legs, and it was pinpricks and tingling sensations and sensations of like bugs crawling underneath my skin.
Like Morgellons disease.
Well, it sounds like the beginning of Guillain-Barré syndrome.
Really?
Exactly. And the thing was, I didn't know anything about Guillain-Barré. And this set of different kinds of symptoms, and that it just kept multiplying, kept moving from my legs one day up to my upper thighs, where I was getting more pinpricks and sort of like stabbing pains, and then even more uncomfortable pains and sensations that I could, like a temperature change where I couldn't tell if the temperature was hot or cold. It could have been either. And it kept moving up until my bladder was involved for a day where it was very painful. Then as it moved up away from my pelvis to my midsection. I started feeling my heart beating in my body. I mean, it was making me hypersensitive, and I could feel organs that I've never felt before.
So did you report all of this to your physician?
Well, you know, it was very difficult for me to distinguish what was going on because I was attacked a number of years ago by a man and had already some things that were going on, but it had to take a little time for me to distinguish and to gain speed and momentum in terms of how many different things were happening that were not what I was normally experiencing.
Well, by the time
it got up to my throat and my mouth, I started getting really frightened, and I called the doctor, who was not in, and they gave me an on-call doctor. And when I explained the symptoms, they told me to go to the ER immediately and
wow.
told me about this Guillain-Barré syndrome, which I'd never heard about.
Well,
without knowing, I went to the ER. They did a blood test, a urinary test, put me on a heart monitor. By that time, it was coming up to the crown of my head and down over my face, and I was panicked out in the ER. And the doctor came back a few hours later and says, "You don't have Guillain-Barré. Go home."
Go home? So what do you have? Just a reaction?
Well, there's...
well, that was over a number of weeks, so it wasn't just right away. And since then, he said, "Well, if you start to get weak or you start to feel fatigued," which I already was, he said, "Contact your doctor." But he said, even if I had it back then, which was on the 19th of the month, he said they wouldn't have treated me for it. And I started doing research on the internet because I wanted to know what this thing was. And I have every single symptom of it except the paralysis.
Yep.
And so I called up my doctor, and I walked into my doctor with a 5-page letter so that she could read it and see what all the things were, because I have a hard time now with my words. I'm stumbling even more than normal, and I'm getting more and more fatigued. I've got deep, deep muscle pain.
Okay, with the minute left, Sherry, give us some quick recommendations for Margo. What does she do?
Well, there's two things. She needs to see a neurologist, number one, because she may not have full-blown Guillain-Barré, but there's another type of syndrome that's very similar that's called ADEM, which is disseminated encephalomyelitis, which is a big word for a lot of the things that she's actually having. And both of those can be associated with the flu shot. So she definitely needs to see a neurologist because there definitely are treatments. The other thing she needs to do is go to the VAERS site, which is V as in Victor, A as in Apple, E as in Edward, R as in Robert, S as in Sam, VAERS.hhs.gov, and file a report with all of her symptoms, with the shot that she got, the brand name that she got, of the flat, and all of the symptoms she had and the date. She absolutely needs to do that. And if the symptoms continue, she may want to contact a vaccine injury compensation attorney to see if she can get some treatment and some compensation for the vaccine injury that she's had.
Frightening, Sherry, isn't it?
It is. And the biggest thing that's the most frightening about all that, George, is that doctors refuse to admit that there's a problem that's been caused by a vaccine. They look at these reactions and they blow it off and say it cannot be a vaccine. It has to be anything else but the vaccine. And to me, that is the biggest travesty.
Why are they so tainted? Not the vaccines, but the doctors.
part of it is, some of it is like, well, if she had had a shot of penicillin and had those reactions, they'd have said right away, oh, well, it's a penicillin reaction.
That's right.
But because it's a vaccine, if they start understanding the problems that are being caused by these vaccines, they have to tear apart their entire paradigm because they are so embedded in this pharmaceutical-based paradigm that if they start seeing that the vaccines are causing problems, then they've got to look at their entire litany of pharmaceutical drugs and say, these are all causing problems too. We need to go forth and do something different. And they're not willing to do it.
Sherry, let's stay in touch, okay?
Absolutely, George. Thanks so much for having me on.
Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, website's linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, I will be talking with three special guests about probably one of the biggest stories that's ever affected us personally in modern times. That's the Fukushima disaster, How is it affecting us? What's really going on? I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.